While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all listeners tuning in from every corner of the country and beyond. Thank you for joining us on Eagle FM, the station where conversations count. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On The Read and News Analysis, your weekday deep dive into the stories shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, it's Friday, the 21st of November, 2025, and the time is 5 minutes past the hour, 1300 hours. Now, as we slide into the end of the week, we continue to unpack the major developments unfolding across the nation, from policy shifts influencing our economy to the social realities felt in our communities every single day. Now here on The Reader, we don't just skip the headlines, we interrogate them. We bring you context, clarity, and a meaningful conversation connecting the dots to help Namibia understand the forces shaping our present and defining our future. Every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we bring you the country's most pressing stories through expert interviews, archived insights, deep dive analysis, and your voices that keep the national dialogue alive. Because in a world overflowing with information, thoughtful understanding remains our greatest strength. Now, today's program will be spotlighting the key national stories you need to know, exploring their wider implications, and engaging with the people at the forefront of policy, innovation, and governance. Now, remember, you can catch On The Reading News Analysis on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app straight to your mobile app. Don't forget to join in on the conversation on our WhatsApp channel, where we share exclusive clips in listener polls and behind the scenes highlights. Now, wherever you're tuning in from your office, your home, or out on the road, stay with us, stay reflective, and stay engaged, because right here on the Reading News Analysis, Namibia doesn't just listen, Namibia comes to think. Let's get right with what's on the agenda for today's news analysis. The Ministry of Health and Social Services today officially launched the Namibia National Smart Survey, a major national initiative aimed at generating up-to-date data on the country's nutrition, health, and food security status. Now, the Smart Survey, which stands for Standardized Monitoring and Assessment of Relief and Transitions, is an internationally recognized methodology used to collect reliable information on malnutrition levels, mortality rates, and key public health indicators, particularly among children and women. The launch marks a significant milestone in Namibia's efforts to strengthen evidence-based planning and improve the effectiveness of health and nutrition interventions. Now, through this survey, the ministry will gather critical data on child stunting, wasting, and underweight trends, as well as household food security, access to safe drinking water, sanitation, and basic health services. Health officials say the findings will play a crucial role in shaping national policies, strengthening targeted nutrition programs, and guiding the equitable allocation of resources to the most vulnerable communities across the country. The survey is also expected to support Namibia's progress towards archiving or achieving its national development priorities and global communities, including the Sustainable Development Goals, particularly those enforced on in ending hunger, improved maternal and child health, and reducing inequality. Now, during the implementation phase, trained survey teams will visit selected households in various regions to conduct interviews and take basic measurements such as height and weight, especially among children under the age of 5. Now, the ministry calls on communities, regional authorities, civil society organizations, and the development partners to build full cooperation to the survey teams to ensure accurate and comprehensive results. The launch of the Namibia National Smart Survey reaffirms the government's commitment to strengthening the health system, improving nutrition outcomes, and enhancing the overall well-being of all Namibians through data-driven decision-making. It couldn't come at a better time, especially when when we still see children, stunted children, or malnourished children right here in Namibia. Let's now take a listen to Dr. Naomi Shopala. She is the Director for Primary Healthcare in the Ministry of Health and Social Services.
Namibia is among those countries that has been hit by the El Nino, and we have seen what has been the impact of this in terms of food shortages and limited access to clean water and disease outbreaks. We have seen the prices of food skyrocketing because of the shortage in terms of the supply. And we have seen that over 56,000 children and pregnant women are in need of the prevention and treatment services because of this effect. So we did this survey because we needed data, and the data that we are currently using is from the 2013 demographic health survey. Although we know that the ministry is doing all what is possible to carry out the next demographic health survey. ED has already indicated that we wanted to get data by doing what we call a smart survey, which is standing for, "Ah, good afternoon, children. How are you? I can see you. I can see you. Can you hear me? Are you able to listen to me? High five." So it's called a smart survey, standing for Standardized Monitoring and Assessment of Relief and Transition. This survey or the methodology has been used in other settings, and we have used it here in Namibia for the nutrition with the support of our partners. What were the main objectives for this survey? Is to generate representative regional data on the nutrition status of the children. And this included children under 5, from 6 to 59 months. But we also looked at women of reproductive age, knowing that if the nutrition of the mother is not okay, we do not expect the nutrition of the baby and children to be okay. There were so many specific objectives, and I'm not going to read each one of them, but I have highlighted a few words that you can just grasp. We were looking at prevalence of wasting, chronic malnutrition, underweight and overweight. We looked at dietary diversity. We looked at morbidity, coverage for measles vaccination and other vaccines, the deworming, supplementation for vitamin A. We also looked at infant and young child feeding practices. We looked at water sanitation and hygiene, but we also looked at food consumption and how the community is coping with the lack or the shortage of food. And then we looked at the recommendation to address the identified gaps. This slide is talking to the methodology, and as I said, I will not go through the entire methodology again, but the slide is really a summary of what is in the report, and we will share the whole report for everybody to look at it. It was a cross-sectional survey. We did household sampling, and we had a team that went into the field to collect this data, looking at the records, but also interviewing. This table is showing us that we have gone to all the regions. This is the total number of the household that we have sampled for each region. And this is the total number of clusters in each region that we have sampled. And this is the total population that was included in the survey for each of these regions. Just to indicate, the sample was quite big and reliable. In terms of the demography, so we included a total of 10,000 households. We included 7,962 children under 5, and we included over 2,500 children under 2, and close to 10,000 women of reproductive age. There is further breakdown in terms of their demographic characteristics. These are some of the indicators that we looked at during the survey. And these are some of the items that I have highlighted in the objectives. Also, I'm not going to go through one by one. In terms of indicators on nutrition status, we looked at the death rate, food security, water, sanitation and hygiene, and then the health in terms of intervention for childhood. Now, we used international acceptable standard to measure the indicators that we were looking at. And in terms of the cutoff for acute malnutrition, chronic malnutrition, and underweight, these were the cutoff that we were measuring against what we were seeing. In terms of the global standards, acceptable standard or gold standard, the moderate and the severe of each of these conditions. And then we looked at the classification of severe malnutrition, and these are the standards that we have applied. From the wasting to overweight to stunting. This is the rates that we are using to say it's very high, or it's high, it's medium, it's low, or it's very low. And you will see these colors when we'll show the map, the regional maps. I also wanted to share that actually the results that we are providing or presenting here is highly reliable. And there was a high acceptance rate when the team went out to the field to do this research. If you can just look in terms of household plant and the percentage achieved, most of them are in the 80, in the 90, if it's not even beyond 100. So the acceptance rate for the survey was very good. That's why we were able to achieve the sample that we wanted to achieve. Now we are diving into the results. All what you need to see from this color is red is bad, deep green is good, light green it's okay, orange is somewhat. So we have regional representative here, and we have our Honorable Governor for Commerce here. Commerce is here. So Commerce is medium. The level of malnutrition in Commerce, it's here. Oshikoto, the level of malnutrition, the weight, children whose weight is not corresponding with the height, Oshikoto is the worst affected region. The Kunenes and others are doing better. But there is even a detailed table just to show the percentage of each year. So our regional representative, I guess you are able to see your region here in terms of what is the prevalency of acute malnutrition in your region. So, again, we want the colors to be a little bit lighter. If it's deep brown, maroonish red, it's bad. So this slide is talking about stunting. Yeah? The height for age. Children who are too short for their age. Children who are 10 years old and looks like they are 5. Children who are 3 years old and looks like they are 1 year. So this is what this slide is showing us. We don't have any light green or lime. It's red. Because we are below what is expected. That's why I said, for the love of research, our follow-up research should look at perhaps what are some of the genetics that are contributing to the low height for age. So we need to dig beneath this cover to understand why are our children stunted. One of the items that we looked at is or factor is the infant and young child feeding practices, because the child's weight and height is determined by their genetics, but also by the practices of how they were fed at different ages. Unfortunately, I think when we transfer the slide to this laptop, some of the region are not showing clearly, but ideally, the cutoff is 80%, if that region is doing so well in terms of, are we initiating early breastfeeding? Immediately after the baby is born, what is the first thing to do? We clear the airway and we put the baby to the breast for early bonding and to initiate breastfeeding. So how is your region doing in terms of initiating the breastfeeding? I see some of the regions are just a little bit above 50%. So the breastfeeding is not initiated early. We need to dig to understand why. Exclusive breastfeed is the orange line, and continued breastfeeding is the gray line. So you can see we only have two regions that are above the standard in terms of early and exclusive breastfeeding. So there is a lot of work to do. It's not work that necessarily needs to be done in hospital. This is work that needs to be done at the community level. Hence, we need to engage our community health workers, our traditional leaders, everybody at the community level should be hands on the deck so that we can pull all this graph above the gold standards.
Yes, and today that was what the Ministry of Health and Social Services launched, that is the Smart Savvy. Now, of course, we're spotlighting on a very silent but very serious issue affecting many children across the world, that is malnutrition and stunting, and what the World Health Organization recommends for mothers and caregivers to help prevent that. Now, malnutrition happens when the body does not get the right amount of nutrients, whether too little or sometimes the wrong kind. Now, for children, the most worrying result is stunting, a condition where a child's growth and brain development are affected, leaving them shorter for their age and at risk of lifelong learning and health challenges. But the good news is stunting is preventable, as you could hear Dr. Naomi Shopala speaking about such conditions being preventable. Now, according to the World Health Organization, there are some key steps that caregivers or mothers and communities can pray or can take to protect their children. One of such very important one that are often overlooked, and it was the last part that she was talking about, is exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months. Now, the World Health Organization recommends that babies should receive only breast milk for the first 6 months of life. That is no water, no porridge, no formula, unless medically necessary or unless really necessary where the mother cannot pump. Perhaps it's becoming a little bit difficult to do that. Then we can introduce formula. But exclusive breastfeeding, breast milk is highly recommended for the first 6 months. And I'll break it down why this is so. Now, this is something that, you know, in high school, if for those who did biology, we were taught. And I think when we have grown up and become parents, it's something we just threw to the back of our mind, not realizing that it plays a really important criteria. So it's a necessity for our children even as they grow up. Yeah. So exclusive breastfeeding is the way to go. Even if you're going back to work after 6 months of maternity leave, you can always pump. You know, there are now pumps, manual pumps and electronic pumps or something like that. I forgot the correct names. So you can use those pumps and pump your milk out and leave the baby with some milk. And the nice thing is that this can be stored even in the fridge. You know, you'll have to follow certain guidelines. Now, it does get sometimes to a point where the mother is very much exhausted and she can't keep up with pumping the milk. Then we move to formula. But, you know, a lot of babies nowadays don't actually want to take formula for many given reasons. Now, breast milk provides all the nutrients and the antibodies a baby needs to grow strong. Exclusively breastfed children, or at least those who are being breastfed and taking formula, they tend to be much more stronger, but especially exclusively breastfed children tend to have stronger immune systems compared to those who are not. Now, continuing breastfeeding up to 2 years and beyond is also quite necessary. Now, after 6 months, mothers can introduce some soft, nutritious, complementary foods. But breastfeeding should continue because it remains a vital source of nutrients and protection. Yes. Provide also diverse and nutritious complementary foods. From 6 months onward, children need a variety of foods. Mashed fruits and vegetables. Vegetables can be potatoes, gem squash, butternuts, pumpkins, you know, beetroots even for that matter. Squashing them, you know, giving the child a variety of different ones. Introduce soft porridge. Okatete with oshikandela. No, shikandela is still quite early. Okatete with some, you know, mixed it up or very soft porridge, you know. Just make sure that you give the child a variety of things that she can also choose, he or she can choose from. You know, you see some parents give the child only okatete and that's it. But sometimes you need to think about it logically yourself as a mom. You wouldn't even want to eat soft porridge from Monday to Friday. But you're feeding your baby soft porridge every single day, in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, and maybe breastfeeding them here in between, and you expect the child not to cry, not want the food. So you need to introduce some varieties. Also some fruits now. You bring in the fruits, you mesh the fruits, the bananas, you mesh the bananas, the apples, give them those oranges, you know, mesh the fruits and let the child eat so that they can get the nutrition that is in within that fruit that can help nourish their bodies. Like I said, porridge enriched with groundnuts or beans. There's a book that is actually on my desk, and I wish I had brought it to work today, that was written with a guideline of what to actually feed a little one. Many different things that we sometimes ourselves cannot think of. You know, things like broccoli, things like spinach. Also, you introduce them to a little one. You add a bit of cooking oil, a little bit of salt. You know, sometimes we think children don't need any, but just a little bit of pinch, just to give it some taste so that the child can eat. Eggs, fish, or meat where possible. Mashed meat. Just, you know, even if it's, fish, but you make sure that you it doesn't have any bones, especially for hake, which doesn't have anything. You mesh them. That's maybe within about 8 months, 9 months. Iron-rich foods. A colorful plate helps build a strong body and mind, as opposed to just feeding your child the exact same thing throughout. Ensure good hygiene and safe food preparation. We can't exhaust it more than that. Ensure that anytime you change the baby's diaper, you wash your hands with soap every time and any time before you feed the child. Now, ensure good hygiene. Simple habits like washing hands before preparing food also, or feeding the children, using clean utensils and safe water, help prevent infections that can worsen malnutrition. Some of these things can really be prevented. And for me, I love community health, especially primary health care. That's something that I really like. And I appreciate also how Dr. Naomi Shopala was speaking about. It's a collective effort from the community, from all of us. It's a collective effort, especially when you have someone close to you who is a newborn mother, and you knowing that you have gone through this experience, you have made your mistakes, you have seen it, especially with our firstborn. We tend to make very wrong mistakes and get advice from granny, get advice from auntie, and the things are conflicting each other. You just not know what to do. But then thankfully with your secondborn, you are more grounded. You realize, okay, this I'll do, this I will not do. But nonetheless, it's good to listen to healthcare professionals who know exactly what they are telling you. Also keep up with regular health checkups and immunization. Now, vaccines, growth monitoring, and early treatment of illnesses help protect children from conditions that can lead to poor growth. Support mothers. Nutrition starts with the team. Pregnant and breastfeeding mothers need enough nutritious food, rest, and access to health services. A healthy mother increases the chance of a healthy child. Fathers are support mothers. Sisters, cousins support newborn moms. Community support matters. Families, neighbors, community leaders play a role. Now, when communities understand nutrition, children thrive. Like, I give myself credit. My sister, got a baby for her very first born child, in her 30s. And of course, It doesn't matter whether you are 40, you are 50, or if you are a newborn, you are, if you are a new mom, there are certain things that you don't know because, I mean, the role is completely new to you. So you will need, help from somebody who has walked through that path. So I told the advisor to exclusively breastfeed that baby, and you will successfully exclusively breastfed that child, that baby for 6 months. And as we speak, she is about 9 months, was it 8 months? And she was exclusively breastfed. No water. Because why? Breast milk contains all the water that is needed for the baby. All the nutrition, all the antibodies. You know, sometimes when a child is left, right, center, in and out of hospital, look at their dietary. You as the mom, you as the auntie, look at their dietary. Are they feeding well? Are they eating well? You know, we still get babies that are being, admitted into the hospital because of malnutrition. And sometimes it's really a lack of understanding, and sometimes it's not really a lack of money. For some people, it's maybe a lack of understanding on what really to focus on. Don't just focus on perhaps buying from the shops, especially for us, you know, for us African people, you know, there is Oshikundu, there is Omaere, there is, you know, focus on that which you were, that was used also for you, you know, soft katete with, maybe made out of mahangu or, top score, you know, that type of stuff. So focus also on those things and don't put all your focus on it without complementary dietary food. So make sure that you find a balance. Now, I told you I will speak on the importance of exclusively breastfeeding so that we can just make sure that you as new moms with newborn babies do the right thing. Now, breast milk has the ideal balance of nutrition, protein, fats, vitamins, and minerals, all perfectly tailored to support a baby's growth and development. No formula can copy it completely. No formula can come very, very, very close. They can try, but yeah. Now, it helps to boost stronger immunity as breast milk is packed with antibodies that help protect babies from infections such as diarrhea, pneumonia, ear infections, and many common childhood illnesses. It acts as the baby's first vaccine. Better growth, it's also good for better growth and brain development. Babies who are exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months tend to have healthier weight gain, stronger development, and better cognitive outcomes later in life. It also protects the mother's health too. Now, exclusive breastfeeding helps the mother's body retain to its pre-pregnancy state faster. Did you know that? It reduces the risk of breast and ovarian cancer and helps with natural child pacing when practiced correctly. It also helps release a hormone called oxytocin. Is it oxytocin? I think so. Yeah, that helps the uterus to contract after giving birth. You know, when a mom has given birth and she feels as if there is some sort of contraction again that she's going through. You know, she's feeling something in her stomach and thinking, wait, did they leave another baby in here? Because it feels like I'm going into labor again. So it's also necessary for that. It helps really release that hormone oxytocin so that the uterus can contract and come back to its normal. Yeah, at least try to come back to its normal. Now, of course, it is safe, clean, and always reliable or always ready. Breast milk, you don't have to even say, I need to first pump it in, or that's if you are just breastfeeding directly from the breast to the baby. You don't have to prepare something first. Breast milk needs no preparation, no boiling, no sterilizing. It is a naturally clean, always available, and always at the right temperature, y'all. Especially helpful in areas where safe water may be limited. It also helps save money. Breastfeeding eliminates the cost of formula, bottles, and preparation, easing financial pressure on households. It strengthens bonding. Exclusive breastfeeding creates a close physical and emotional contract between the mother and the child, therefore promoting trust and comfort and a healthy attachment that benefits the baby's development. Yeah. And with that, I hope that, you have learned something today. And this was triggered, of course, by, the Ministry of Health and Social Services launching the Namibia National Smart Savvy, which is a major national initiative aimed at generating up-to-date data on the country's nutrition, the country's health, and the country's food security status. So as for moms, new moms, please ensure that you exclusively breastfeed the child. If you can't exclusively breastfeed the child, consider alternative ways of actually pumping milk from your breast. That's why sometimes when you go back to work, your breasts are so filled up, and it gets also painful. So take advantage of that situation at that early stage and pump milk and be able to ensure that your little one is getting breast milk. Try by all means to ensure that your child is exclusively breastfed for 6 months. Now, if that's not possible, we don't hold a grudge against you. Do that which is still alternative and is helping you as a mother and a newborn to both be happy. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here. This is On The Radar News Analysis. We want to bring news and interrogate it, analyze it, and also bring in context to help you understand the clarity of it all. Our studio number is open, 083-288-401. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendike nawa nokumona oijemo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore zatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now in other news, at the Rundu Town Council on a Thursday officially inaugurated its new traffic law enforcement unit with a handover of two patrol vehicles, marking a major milestone in the town's efforts to strengthen road safety and improve urban management. Now, the new unit housed under the council's emergency and law enforcement section will be led by a senior traffic officer and supported by two traffic officers who are now fully equipped to begin immediate operations. Now, speaking on behalf of the Kavango East Governor, regional chairperson Damien Mahambai welcomed the initiative, saying it comes at a crucial time as Rundu continues to grow rapidly and remains the country's second most populated urban center after Windhoek. Have you heard of City Police? Now there is Rundu Police. He said that the town, but perhaps let's call it Rundu Town Police. He said the town's increasing congestion, rising population, and expanding economic activities demand a more organized and responsive traffic management system. The establishment of this unit sends a strong message that Rundu is taking road safety seriously. A safe, orderly, and well-managed road network is essential for sustainable development, Mahambai said. He emphasized that the success of the unit would depend heavily on the collaboration between the Rundu Town Council and the Namibian Police Force, that is NAMPOL, community policing forums, taxi associations, schools, and residents at large. And I quote, road safety is a shared responsibility. It requires respect, discipline and a mindset that prioritizes human life over convenience. Mahambai added, with the festive season fast approaching, Mahambai urged residents, motorists and pedestrians to be more cautious about and responsible, pardon me, on the roads. He expressed hope that joint efforts between the new unit and NAMPOL would contribute towards a zero fatality season in the region. He also noted that the launch serves as a solemn reminder of the many lives lost and families affected by preventable road accidents, stressing that the new unit should stand as a symbol of Rundu's commitment to safety, order and sustainable urban development. Let's now take a listen to Damien Mahambai.
Drivers of its operators and every member of our community. Road safety is a shared responsibility. It demands respect, discipline, and mindset that values human life above convenience. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, for these efforts to bear fruit, we must foster a spirit of collaboration. I therefore call upon for strengthened partnership between the Rundu Town Council, the Namibian Police Force, community policing forums, trade associations, schools, and the general public. Let us work hand in hand and reduce incidents, protect children, and promote safer behaviors on our street. I think here it's very important if our community, because police cannot always be there. Policy is in the hands of the community. Let us assist Rundu Town Council and our Namibian police in the reporting of incidences that are not welcome in our society or in our town. As we inaugurate this unit, let us reflect on the lives lost, and the families affected by preventable road accidents. Let us commit ourselves to our future where our roads are not places of danger, but channels of progress and connection. The festive season is just next month. And no doubt, they will.
Rundu Town Council Chief Executive Officer Olavi Nathaniel said the creation of the Traffic Law Enforcement Unit is part of the council's long-term strategy to enhance road safety, order, and mobility in one of Namibia's fast-growing towns. Now, as our population, traffic density, and commercial activities increase, the need for a dedicated local authority traffic enforcement unit became unavoidable, Nathaniel said. He explained that the establishment of the unit is guided by the National Road Traffic and Transportation Act, and that Council approved the creation of the unit in September 2021 under the Community Service Department. Since then, the municipality has been working to secure the necessary ministerial approvals, recruit and train qualified personnel, and gradually acquire the required equipment. The unit is now fully resourced with two patrol vehicles, breathalyzers, a speed camera and firearms, providing officers with the tools needed to effectively carry out law enforcement duties. For many years, Rundu depended largely on NAMPOL for the traffic control and general enforcement, as the town did not have its own dedicated municipal traffic unit. Although law enforcement officers were in place to enforce municipal bylaws, they operated under significant constraints, including limited manpower and lack of proper vehicles and equipment. Courtesy of sustained efforts between 2021 and 2024, Rundu Town Council was able to lay the groundwork for its milestone, securing approvals, training officers, and building capacity. The official launch, therefore, marks the first time the town has structured and fully operational municipal traffic law enforcement body aligned with national registration and supported by essential resources. Now, with the unit now active, the council reaffirmed its commitment to creating safer roads and a more orderly urban environment for all road users in Rundu. Let's take a listen to Rundu CEO Olavi Nathaniel.
This is a strategic step which is aimed at improving road safety. We have to do all this
complying to all the relevant laws. We have the typical under section 30, subsection 1, paragraph K, Roman 10 of the Local Authorities Act, makes provision for a local authority council to establish a traffic unit. We comply to that. Now, moving forward, we have to comply towards the Road Traffic and Transport Act. That is your typical section 11, subsection 1 and 3. We complied. Moving forward, we have to...
Your popular $99 combo is back at YouSave. Get 1 kilogram of each Rice King rice, Top Score or Bacoma Super Maize Meal, Sugar King white or brown sugar, 500 grams of Pasta Polana or Pasta King, and 750 milliliter Right Brand sunflower seed oil. That's 5 essential products for only 99 Namibian dollars. You save, I save. Yes, we all save at YouSave.
We have to obviously now comply towards the Road Fund Administration Act. And that's why you see those beautiful cars there. We did all that. So now, we are empowered under the Community Service Department by traffic law enforcement, in addition to what we already had law enforcement. There are two arms. One is for law enforcement. This is your typical bylaw enforcement. And then the second arm is a traffic law enforcement and transport act. Are we clear on that one? So the journey has taken a bit long, up to date, because obviously we had to comply to all these relevant laws. We had to procure all this equipment that needs for the functionality of this unit. And I must tell you, I think in terms of the breathalyzers, there's only a sole certified body, which is in Ocho, that are certified to do calibration or whatever those words are. And they have to order those things from somewhere else, and so that's why it took us a bit longer for us to do the launching today. But we are still grateful for the day that finally we are here. So to this end, we have a senior traffic officer, Mr. Mnando, may you rise? I was wondering why I'm not having a uniform. I'm supposed to look like them. We have 2 traffic officers. Mr. Chinano. Yes, no. For now, there are 3. But what we have on our structure, we have a provision of 8. A chief traffic officer, a senior traffic officer, Mr. Mnango, and then 6 supporting members as traffic officers. So in total, we have 8. And we have 2 cars for now. I'm looking at buying another one very soon. And of course, just empower the unit so that it's fully functional and delivering. And of course, with the support of now the Ministry of Safety, and I must mention that I was just talking to Commissioner Matongo there to say, look, we propose a memorandum of understanding between the Rundu Town Council and the Namibian Police, the Kawango East region, of course, where we have to work together in specific areas in terms of training and resource management. And to this extent, I think we have submitted the draft. It's being vetted by the police unit, and eventually we'll enter into an agreement. So when you see our law enforcement, you see the police. So you just need to be complying and what's the other word? must be participatory. Yeah? So now the primary purpose of the traffic enforcement units is to ensure a safe, efficient, and law-abiding use of the town's road network. In Rundu, you are witnesses that we have heavy traffic congestion. We accommodate the southern part from Rurani. We accommodate Livundu. We accommodate Kawango West. Of course, for the reason that Rundu being the economic hub of the Kawango region, it used to be one. So I will refer to it as such. I won't say Kawango East. I'll say Kawango region, inclusive of East and West. So as this congestion, when motorists and other road users scramble their way, I can tell you 7 o'clock and 5 o'clock, if you move in Eugene Kakukulu Street. Eugene Kakukulu Street is from the circle all the way to backstage, where some of you like to spend your time over weekends. It's congested. The traffic is heavy on that road. So what do we do in the absence of road infrastructure? We need to manage it. How do you manage it? The traffic comes in. Yeah. Therefore, the unit was established to address key challenges affecting Rundu, including the incidents of road accidents and reckless driving, increased congestion in high traffic zones, limited enforcement capacity, as we have been relying only on the police structures, the need for localized and responsive traffic management, the importance of protecting pedestrians, school children, and vulnerable road users. I'm not sure how many of you drive that street where there's a lot of schools, where you find your Rundu Secondary, your Rundu GP, your Rundu SP, your Dr. Romanes. If you drive there at one, you will spend there more time because there's a lot of school children that are using that road. Now, the creation of the unit aligns with national road safety priorities and supports the decentralization of traffic functions to local authority. As I indicated earlier, we, under Section 30, have a mandate to introduce traffic units in our structures. Now, in terms of their mandate, amongst others, Mr. Mnango and the team are to enforce municipal traffic bylaws and national road traffic regulations, do routine patrols, checkpoints, and road safety inspections, manage traffic flow during peak hours, the typical 7 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 5 o'clock, events and emergencies. You can also come to our office. We can do escort services for you. You will pay. I'm thinking of increasing the price because these uniforms are looking too nice. We need to afford them. They are also to issue penalties, warnings, and citations for traffic violation, promote road safety education in schools. I want to also bring it to the attention of the House that our functions are not limited to only managing traffic. They can do awareness. That goes with the emergency service as well. That goes with the law enforcement. So at your request, we can come to you. We can give you some inductions so that you, when you comply, when we say comply, we have given you education. Now, like I said, collaborate with the Namibian police and the emergency services and other stakeholders. The ultimate goal for this unit is that what we want to see is a reduction in road accidents, injuries, and fatalities, improve compliance with traffic regulations, enhance safety around schools and pedestrian zones, and a better flow of vehicles at busy intersections and business areas, increase public confidence in municipal service, and strengthen collaboration between community stakeholders and law enforcement. Mind you, we also have neighborhood watches in different zones that are functional. So collaboratively, we have to work with them, together with the safety cluster. Ultimately, the unit positions Rundu to develop into a safer, more orderly, and more efficient urban environment. Of course, now we need to understand Rundu is the biggest town. I always say that because we are not a city in Namibia. So we need to have ourselves organized. Now, moving from September 2021 up to date, we had to do consultations. We had to look at city of Rundu that had the city police. We knew about Katima. We knew about Balfes and many others. So there were consultations that was helping us run through this process efficiently. So in that order, I want to acknowledge now several people that were helping the Rundu Town Council. This is now the retired chief, Abraham Kanibe, of the city police. They were very, very helpful. I know we went to them in terms of uniforms. We have to get some exemptions on certain aspects. So he was really helpful to us. I also want to acknowledge the Balfes Bay Traffic Municipality under the retired Chief Eben Platt. I also would like to acknowledge the late Mr. Dave Filion, who assisted us with amending and drafting.
And that is Rundu CEO Olavi Nathaniel. With that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with calling up our lucky winner for the 500 ShopRite YouSave gift voucher. Stay on the line. Perhaps you are the lucky winner.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushenjife nawa nukumona oijamoili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM VI.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
And the phone is ringing. We are calling up our lucky winner. A very good afternoon to you, ma'am. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm okay.
Yes.
This is Happy calling you from Eagle FM. You are live on air right now. Anything you say can be used against you in the court of law.
Who's speaking?
Happy Juju from Eagle FM. You're live on air.
From Eagle FM?
Yes.
Fantastic! Bring the good news.
I want to find out, are you a faithful listener of Eagle FM?
Yes.
Are you?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Are you a faithful listener of Eagle FM?
Yes.
Okay. Give me two presenters' names and the shows they present.
Sorry,
never mind. Since you can't hear me, let me just cut to the chase. You are our Friday's lucky winner of the ShopRite. You save 500 gift voucher. Congratulations.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. I've been waiting for it.
It's the way you say bring the good news. Clearly you've been waiting, ne?
I've been waiting, definitely.
Who am I speaking to?
To Michelle Morva.
Michelle Morva, you're from?
I am from Venduk.
Okay, Michelle. My colleagues will call you up to tell you how you can pick up your voucher.
Thank you very much.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeje pa omarudi dayo loka opone ujendi kenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa inge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatuimwe bali heari nola natu heari bali no heari ile kongerewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome to News Beyond the Borders of Namibia. We're starting off regionally, moving over to continental news thereafter. International news coming your way. Now, starting off in South Africa, where there is a gender-based violence march. South Africans are remembering victims of GBV and femicide, and activists demand urgent action to be taken in order to address gender-based violence. Let's take a listen.
Cross to our reporter Nhlakanipho Magwaza, who's in Durban for us, also monitoring the GBV shutdown. Good afternoon, Nhlakanipho. I can just see behind you a sea of black. What have those gathered there shared on the moment that brought them to this place, recognizing that what is taking place in South Africa is a crisis warranting a response at that level?
Oh, Good afternoon, Mfundo, and to the viewers at home. As you can see, they have just finished their 15 minutes of silence lying on the ground. Some of them are still making their way here at to South Beach from North Beach because there were two places that were designated for this march today, but one of them was cancelled, so they're walking from North Beach to here at South Beach. However, we do have one of the coordinators, Ms. Dineo, who will be telling us about what exactly they're hoping to achieve. I do understand, notice that some of the boards are saying that they are against what the president has declared, the national crisis. You guys are looking for a national disaster. Tell us more about that.
Thank you so much. I think essentially what this move or this lie down was about today was really a way of saying we are looking for attention. We are looking for something to be done quite urgently. And I think yesterday's announcement by the president to say he has declared it a crisis is a move in the right direction. As much as many women here today are saying that it doesn't mean anything, I think for us that's a step, a milestone, a step in the right direction. We are, however, saying we would like to see action now taken. The reason why we had said we wanted to be declared an emergency or a disaster is because of the urgency we feel, the heaviness and the statistics that are literally pointing out that 15 women are dying every single day because of this. And so to us, that's an emergency. 15 lives daily is an emergency. However, we acknowledge the announcement that has been made by the president, and we now await to see what will be done on the ground.
I see the crowd, they're not just satisfied about lying down. What's happening now?
So we are trying as much as possible to prevent this becoming a march, because essentially what the Women for Change had wanted was it to be a silent lie down. Essentially, we are not trying to aggravate anybody. We are not trying to raise our voices, but we are just taking a stand, a united stand, to say we feel that enough is enough. And the silence was supposed to be, we are not going to say anymore. This is just us coming together to show that we are not happy. I'm hoping that it doesn't become a march. We have managed to calm them down. They are now going to just take a walk along the promenade on this beach.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was one of the coordinators, Ms. Dineo, saying that they are satisfied or are pleased with what the president said yesterday, but they're still looking for GBV to be declared a national disaster so that a more urgent interventions will be taken to prevent GBV from exacerbating. As we all know that here in KZN, GBV is one of our main concerns with women being violated and being abused on a daily basis. We've seen in previous years how women were brutally killed here in the province. And she is saying that women here, as well as men, there are men who have joined to support the women in their fight against GBV, and to say and to urge other men to join the fight against GBV. She is saying that they are angry and they want to take this further and march to raise their voices and their campaign to be heard. Back to you in studio, Fundo.
Thank you very much. That's Nonhlakanipho Magwaza in Durban for us.
In our clean energy transition, a concern for mining areas in South Africa.
Coal, one of the country's top mining exports, but there's still a decline in exports and production due to the shift to renewable energy. Despite this, coal remains vital for the country's energy sector and is still the source of employment. More than 80% of our electricity generation comes from coal-fired power plants. 12 of the power stations are in Mpumalanga. Government's program to move to cleaner energy sources still threatens many, especially those working at coal mines and the communities around the mines.
In terms of South Africa moving from coal to green energy, as the people from Mpumalanga, as I stay in Mpumalanga, I don't think it's a good idea. Our people here, we depend more on the coal here, and a lot of people bread and butters are here in the core, in the Mpumalanga province. So in South Africa as a whole, yes, it is fine for the energy side because it's faster and all, but a lot of people will be jobless.
The closure of that mine, those houses, most of them are now empty, dilapidated, vandalized, and local economy was somehow affected. Families, income, other kids, their parents could not afford maybe to take them to school.
The shift away from fossil fuel to reduce carbon emissions, it is aimed at achieving climate goals, a vision to net zero by 2050.
When they specifically mean about the cleaning, I understand because most of the areas suffers from like pollution and that leads to health issues. Most of the people die based on those coal mining, and I think it should be done away in terms of those.
The community now is not falling on sick, it always with a lungs or TB, even a children, even a small child now. If we are using the gas stove, it's better than before when we used the coal stove number 7. The other things at the afternoon, evening also, on the morning also, there was many of a root dust of a stove. Because when we wake up in the morning, you can saw all the stove gas, or not gas, the coal stove, is starting to be burning and smoking also. And that smoke is come through all over the community.
Next month, the G20 countries will be gathered in this country discussing a variety of topics. Clean and renewable energy is among the topics: energy security, inclusive energy transition, social and people-centered transitions will be discussed.
I think they should discuss more on job creation, because that's the biggest issue that we're facing as a country. So they should have more ideas. We'll see, are they bringing solar, but then in there, there should be job creation.
The G20 is working to expand access to affordable, renewable energy for all, especially in rural areas. The country's presidency is pushing for universal energy access by 2030. Nhlamulo Mabasa, SABC News, Middelburg, Mpumalanga.
Meanwhile, Ethiopia's Bulbula Industrial Park boosts local processing and cuts imports.
180 kilometers southeast of Addis Ababa, in the central Oromia region, lies the Bulbula Integrated Agro-Industrial Park, extending over 271 hectares of land. The park, one of the largest agro-industrial parks in Ethiopia, currently houses about 15 factories, some still under construction, while others are already in production.
This park is designed so that any agricultural product, whether it's cereals or livestock products, can be brought here and processed. Instead of exporting raw materials, we add value locally, create jobs, and supply to both domestic and international markets.
TK Industrial Group is a conglomerate of 7 integrated factories based in the park, primarily producing cooking oil.
We have almost five oil products: sunflower, soybean, palm, and soya and palm oil blend, and sunflower and palm oil blend. Additionally, we have black cumin oils also. We make a cold pressing. We extract the oil from that. The byproduct we used for animal feed. The oil will be exported for international market, and also for national market.
According to Mesfin, all the raw seeds, with the exception of palm, are sourced locally.
Raw material sources in this is collected from different local markets, from the farmers. We make a cooperation with the farmers. We collected. It is a seasonal. Now it is a collection time for this year. So we already assigned the personnel and also make agreement with
Ukraine's farmers.
And also we planned to give train for the farmers, because if the farmers not keep the quality, we can't get the quality products.
Import substitution is among the main objectives of the country's industrial parks. Cooking oil is one of the most imported food products in Ethiopia, costing the country millions of dollars in foreign currency every year. But the factory behind me, located in Bulbula Agro Industrial Park, is working to change that. It produces cooking oil using locally harvested seeds such as soybeans and sunflowers, and has the capacity to refine up to 100,000 liters of oil per day. With the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement widening regional access, the Bulbula Integrated Agro-Industrial Park sees an opportunity to attract more investors and drive exports.
AFCFTA is a major regional advantage we leverage to entice investors. It motivates them to invest, targeting beyond the local market and earn foreign currency through exports, and we actively advocate for it.
Despite the progress, constraints such as limited investor readiness and financing shortages continue to slow the full potential of industrial parks across the country.
If some of these challenges can be addressed, parks like this one could help drive Africa's next wave of industrialization by keeping more value within the continent and connecting small farmers with industries. Beka Atoma, CGTN, Bulbula, Ethiopia.
Climate change threatens socio-economic development in Africa.
According to the World Meteorological Organization's State of the Climate in Africa 2024 report, extreme weather and related events have adversely affected socio-economic development in Africa and worsened hunger, insecurity and displacement. South Africa is one of those countries that have experienced the impact of rapid climate change firsthand. It has been hit hard by frequent droughts, intense heat waves, and devastating floods.
Well, South Africa is quite an arid country. So the fact that climates are changing and we're having more extreme droughts and more extreme rainfall is one of the biggest issues. If you remember the massive damages that happened in KwaZulu-Natal when we had that tropical low, we've got some colleagues at the University of Wits who have demonstrated that the damage that was caused by that climate event was attributable to global climate change.
The challenges being experienced by South Africa due to climate change have been made worse by the country's continued and heavy reliance on coal to power its economy.
Coal is South Africa's dominant energy source. 77% of South Africa's energy needs are provided by coal. And this is according to the country's Mineral Resources and Energy Department.
Despite keeping most of its coal, South Africa is also the producer of 90% of the coal used in the whole of Africa.
Outside the already burdened health system in South Africa, coal is extremely pollutant, you know, with high emissions of carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrogen oxide. Especially the black carbon. So that in itself is a big challenge, the health hazard that it brings into our community. Moreover, you know, it increases, you know, the emissions of carbon emissions. So those are one of the biggest threats that we're looking at.
South Africa has already burned more coal than what would be considered our fair share globally. So we're in climate debt to the world. Like, South Africa has built its economy on coal for the last 50 years. So per capita, we've poured more carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases into the air than is our fair share globally. So unlike other African countries, South Africa is contributing a lot to climate change. So we need to cut down and stop burning coal for our energy. But we need to do that in a way that still enables South Africans to have a quality of life.
According to the South African government, the program involves more than just switching to cleaner energy sources. It's also about ensuring that the transition is equitable, inclusive, and affordable. Some experts are, however, not happy with the implementation of the transition.
We have a just energy transition, you know, paper that is out there, for the world to see. However, we feel that, you know, people's power is not really inclusive in that manner that we would like, especially because it does not talk to what we are looking for as the community, to be included in, you know, this whole just energy transition. You know, owning the means of production, owning the means of investment, you know, to make sure that we are not left behind, you know, to own some of this local renewable energies.
Both experts have welcomed the fact that climate change is one of the key priority areas at the G20 summit. For many who will be attending the summit, that discussion on climate change is one of the most important ones, given the extreme weather events many countries around the world are currently experiencing. Yudis Njomela for CGTN in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Climate change, your carbon footprint explained.
You know you should probably reduce it, but what exactly is your carbon footprint? A carbon footprint refers to the total amount of greenhouse gases released into the Earth's atmosphere as a result of the activities of an individual or an organization. Remember, greenhouse gases trap heat inside the atmosphere, and that's overheating the planet. So if you want to work out your own carbon footprint, you need to know the amount of greenhouse gases, like carbon dioxide, you're responsible for creating. It's a difficult thing to measure precisely, and there are different definitions about how best to calculate it. But roughly speaking, there's the direct impact of using energy when we travel or to power our homes. And there's the indirect impact of the energy that's used to create all the things we use or consume. In the developed world in particular, transport is a big part of your carbon footprint. Cutting down on the use of petrol or diesel cars and taking fewer flights is one of the most effective ways of reducing it. The place you live also contributes to your personal footprint. It's important to make sure your home is heated or cooled efficiently and is well insulated. The more you can use sustainable energy like solar or wind power, the more you cut your emissions. The stuff you use at home also adds to the problem. All that plastic, metal and cardboard takes a lot of energy to produce and dispose of. So recycling can help reducing your carbon footprint, but not as much as how you travel or heat and cool your home. Then there's your diet. Above all, red meat makes your carbon footprint bigger because cows produce so much methane, another greenhouse gas. And huge numbers of trees are cut down to create pastures on which cattle can graze. In the developing world, polluting stoves are a real problem too, so it's important to try to replace them with more efficient methods of cooking. But overall, people in poorer countries produce far smaller amounts of greenhouse gases than people in richer countries do. So, if you look at just what a country produces, the average amount of carbon dioxide emissions per person in the United States is about 16.1 tonnes per year. In China, it's 7.1 tonnes, and in the UK, it's about 5.5 tonnes. But in the Democratic Republic of Congo, it's only 0.03 tonnes, while in Qatar, which has a really small population but produces so much oil and gas, it's 38.6 tonnes. Now, that's just production. It doesn't take account of all the other things we've talked about, how much you consume. But obviously, the more money you have, the more you tend to consume. So if people in richer countries really want to reduce their carbon footprint, they need to make huge changes in their lifestyles. It can be done, and new technologies to make things greener are coming on stream all the time. But it is a reminder that the declared aim in many countries of going carbon neutral by the middle of this century means a revolution in the way we live.
Now, NASA says global sea levels rose by more than expected last year. The agency blamed an unusual amount of ocean warming combined with water from melting glaciers. 2024 was the hottest year on record. Henna Hundal is a delegate to the UN Climate Change Conferences. And she spoke to me earlier telling me the significance of the rising levels.
The global sea level rise is higher than expected. It clocked in around 0.59 centimeters per year. It was expected to be around 0.43 centimeters per year. Why does this matter? Well, two reasons. Number one, it's not just that the sea levels are rising. We know that. It's actually that rate of change, the rate of that rise is picking up. And number two, about two-thirds of this rise is deemed to be due to thermal expansion, which is the warming of the ocean water. So as we have a greater concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, that's trapping heat, and our oceans are actually absorbing around 90% of that heat. And of course, that's not without consequences, and I think that's the issue we're dealing with right now.
So when we say we've got the melt, the ocean levels are rising, is this a uniform process?
Well, the issue right now is that because around two-thirds of that rise was due to thermal expansion, the ocean actually trapping that excess heat. I mean, we're seeing the effects of this excess heat throughout the world. 2024 was the hottest year on record. It featured the hottest summer on record, which included the hottest day on record. So when we really take a step back and look at the lay of the land here, it's not a pretty picture. And unfortunately, now is the time to be really honing in on policies that help us facilitate that critical energy transition toward the clean energy economy of the future, away from these greenhouse gas emissions that are underlying a lot of these processes.
Where are we with nations agreeing that something has to be done? Because every time we have the climate change COP that is held, people lose more and more hope. I mean, we can't help those glaciers recover, can we? So what can be done?
It's very important to think about, you know, two-thirds of that global sea level rise was due to thermal expansion, one-third, though, due to the melting of glaciers and ice sheets. So we have so much to think about in terms of how do we actually get a handle on this situation. And you're absolutely right. We need multinational collaboration on this issue. And unfortunately, you know, at this very moment here in the United States, you know, we had President Trump take the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement, just like he did during his first term in office. The U.S. missed the recent meeting of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the global authority on climate change and whose reports really underpin all global climate policy. And, you know, now the head of the Environmental Protection Agency here just announced that it would be the most consequential day of deregulation in U.S. history, meaning that he's looking to target those key climate regulations that President Biden had put forth.
Hannah,
so unfortunately, very precarious.
Hannah, very quickly, I think many people are familiar with President Trump's approach to climate change. Who is doing it right?
You know, I think, interestingly, actually, China is sort of stepping up in terms of clean energy. They're really leading the charge there, which is a very fascinating development to see. So I'm very hopeful that we'll see some continued progress there, and maybe they will step into the fold. I mean, a lot remains to be determined. We know that in 2021, at the UN Climate Change Conference that occurred in Scotland, China and India sort of teamed up together to try to suppress a movement to transition away from coal. So, you know, there's so many pieces here that are in flux, but I'm hopeful that, you know, with some of that leadership in Asia around clean energy, maybe more countries will step up from the fray.
Zelensky says he's ready to work with the U.S. on the ambition for ending the war in Ukraine.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has given a guarded response to a plan drafted by the White House to end the war in his country, insisting that Ukraine needs a dignified peace. The plans have not yet been made public, but it's believed that they are favourable to Russia. Well, Russia currently controls about 20% of Ukraine, including much of the eastern Donbass region. Well, President Putin's already said he would want full control of Luhansk and neighbouring Donetsk, which together make up the Donbass. Well, before the invasion in 2022, Russia already controlled Crimea after seizing it in 2014. But President Zelensky has repeatedly ruled out giving up any territory as part of a peace deal. Well, one American official told the AFP news agency that the plan does include what they call NATO-style security guarantees for Ukraine. The White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt was asked for more details about the plans when she spoke to reporters at a White House press briefing.
President Trump has made it very clear since day one, and even on the campaign trail, that he wants to see this war come to an end. He has grown increasingly frustrated with both sides of this war, Russia and Ukraine alike, for their refusal to commit to a peace agreement. But nevertheless, the president and his national security team are steadfast in seeing this war come to an end, to end the killing and deliver on the president's promise.
Well, our North America correspondent Sean Dilley has been following developments from Washington.
You really would like to be a fly on the wall, wouldn't you, when President Zelensky phones up Donald Trump, the man who said that if he was president at the time the Ukraine war broke out, there wouldn't have been a war in the first place. He would sort it out in a day, he said, if he was re-elected president. Well, of course, it's proven to be slightly more difficult than that. And part of the reason, actually, is because there's rather a lot that he needs to do to please Ukraine and to please Moscow. The White House have come out strongly fighting against allegations that this is a deal that was cooked up between America and Russia without any involvement from Ukraine, claiming credit for coming up with a deal that's rumoured to be 28 points, at least according to the AFP news agency and Reuters, who say they've seen this draft agreement. Now, the Kremlin and Ukraine have both given it somewhat of a lukewarm reception. Ukraine thanking the president for his efforts to make peace, rather diplomatic language from a man who was essentially kicked out of the Oval Office by the president and the vice president, J.D. Vance, we'll remember those scenes, saying that he's looking forward to speaking to President Trump, but any solution is going to have to respect the dignity of his country. And Russia, who say that they haven't had any consultation as such, but they have had contact from the United States. Some of those 28 points rumoured to be that Ukraine would hand over the Donbass region, reduce the size of the army and reduce and scale down the weaponry it has. And we'll remember, of course, much of that weaponry provided by the US and the West.
Our correspondent Jonathan Bale told me more about the reaction to those developments. He's been speaking to me from Kyiv.
Publicly, President Zelensky has been very careful as to what he says, neither accepting nor rejecting the plans in this draft peace proposal. In his address last night, he said Ukraine needed peace. It would take part in diplomacy. It would issue no rash statements. So clearly he is considering it. We know he will talk to President Trump soon. But behind the scenes, there is a lot of concern about some of these proposals, which, as you say, seem to reflect what Moscow has been demanding, including giving up the entire Donbass region, reducing the size of Ukraine's military, agreeing to no international troops in the country. And remember, European countries have been working on a reassurance force. Some people call it a peacekeeping force. They've called it a reassurance force. If there is a ceasefire, that's been ruled out. There are some demands of Moscow, too, we understand in this. As you say, there is talk of firm US security guarantees. We don't know exactly what they are. There's talk about using some Russian frozen assets to help rebuild Ukraine. There's talk of enshrining in law a Russian commitment not to invade Ukraine. I'm not sure whether many people here in Ukraine would think that's worth the paper it was written on. But I think overall, this is not a deal that is hugely favourable to Ukraine. It doesn't meet some of the demands it's been making. They've rejected some of these proposals in the past, but we know from the US officials who've been travelling here to Kyiv, who met with President Zelensky yesterday, presented that plan, that they want a quick response. They are looking at trying to get an agreement within weeks before the end of the year. So they are planning to go to Moscow probably after Thanksgiving and trying to get agreement there too. But the clock is ticking.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's news bulletin. Stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow for life lessons from 1900 hours up until 2100 hours. Have yourself a wonderful and blessed weekend ahead.